You're listening to Central Florida Seen and Heard, Rising Water. Hi, I'm Molly Durig, environment reporter for Central Florida Public Media. This is the third episode of a special podcast expanding on our newsroom's reporting on water management in a Central Florida that's changing fast. This is episode 3 of Central Florida Seen and Heard, Rising Water, part 2. So far in this podcast, we've spent a lot of time focused on flooding, especially in the wake of Hurricane Milton, a deadly Category 3 storm that dropped 16 inches of rain on parts of Central Florida.
We just kept watching the water come closer and closer. I said, we're going to have to get out of here because I got really scared, you know? There was nothing we could do.
This time, we'll be talking about something else often closely related to flooding, water quality. While flooding and water quality may sound like two totally different issues, in reality, it's all interconnected, just like Florida's water and land.
Florida, the way our water flows throughout the state, the land and the water are very intrinsically tied together.
That's Alex Roberts with the St. Johns River Water Management District, who we heard from last episode. Roberts showed me in real time how wetlands naturally absorb floodwaters around Lake Jessup in Seminole County, helping reduce flood impacts for nearby communities. Wetlands also play another vital water management role, filtering out pollutants.
Wetlands are the first treatment system for these large lakes.
On this day, 2 weeks after Hurricane Milton, Roberts and an environmental scientist with the district are letting me tag along on their airboat while they do some water quality testing on Lake Jessup. This is routine testing, nothing related to the recent storm. But after storms like hurricanes, extra stormwater runoff from heavy rains can carry more pollutants into Florida's watersheds, like Lake Jessup. Most of the district's test results aren't instant, but staff can get some general sense of how healthy the lake is right now, measuring things like temperature and water clarity.
This is at 0.5, so it's been worse, it's been better, it's just okay.
2 weeks after Milton, most of these quick readings look pretty good. Robert says overall, Lake Jessup's water quality is on the up and up, but it's all relative, especially given what used to happen here.
There were wastewater discharges into Jessup, historically. I mean, treated wastewater, it wasn't raw sewage. On Lake Jessup specifically, those have ceased.
As of 1983, according to Seminole County. But the state still approves wastewater discharges into other water bodies, and when severe storms bring even more water, it can overwhelm wastewater systems even more, causing them to overflow.
It's just the systems, they can't handle it. If that rainwater is coming in at a great rate, it's creating a huge amount of flow into that system. And now the wastewater has nowhere to go but out in a heck of a hurry.
That's Valerie Harwood, a microbiologist and professor of integrative biology at the University of South Florida. She and the students in her lab study sewage, looking at the DNA of bacteria and viruses in water to determine if sewage contamination is there and where it came from.
Even though you usually don't see it, there's a lot of issues with sewage contamination in the environment.
That's the key. We often don't see it.
With sewage contamination, a lot of times you can't even see the stuff that's going to hurt you. Fecal contamination at a level where there's enough pathogens, enough disease-causing microorganisms to make people sick, that doesn't necessarily change the color or the odor of the water.
But it can be serious enough for the health department to post beach warnings about high bacteria levels in the water. Earlier this year, Governor Ron DeSantis vetoed the Safe Waterways Act, a bipartisan law that would have streamlined state reporting processes and ramped up requirements for cases of public water contamination from sewage.
The best philosophy for people is to try and stay out of the water until they know that the flooding's over and that sewage discharges are no longer going on.
Harwood says she recognizes sometimes that's impossible.
Don't go in that water. You'll catch something.
When I meet Bill Barney 4 days after Hurricane Milton, he's doing his best to stay out of the floodwaters still lingering in his neighborhood in Astor, a small unincorporated community right where Volusia and Lake counties meet. On this day, the water in the St. Johns River is so high, it's taking over the street. But Barney says the river isn't what flooded his home.
It's not like the water came in the house. The water came into the house through the toilets, blew the seals out of the toilet.
Slow, slow. Slow it down.
Right next door to Barney, Rich Williams is trying to get cars to slow down as they plow through the floodwaters, sending small waves rippling all the way up to his garage. So far, Williams says his cars aren't damaged.
This is an 86 Corvette. As you can see, it has antique tags.
Just like Barney, Williams says all his flood damage is inside.
The problem we had here was sewage water coming in the house from under the toilets. This is the room that was affected the most.
Williams says in his 13 years of living here, it's the first time he's seen wastewater coming up from below right into his home. He shows me where it seeped in, from under the toilet in the bathroom, just off his bedroom.
I found where the water was coming from, and as you can see, I have a test plug in there now to stop the water from coming out.
Mm-hmm. Right? Otherwise it'd be coming right out?
Otherwise it would be flowing out of there.
Here in this pocket of Astor where Williams lives, only about 143 people depend on this wastewater system. The Florida Government Utility Authority owns and operates it. I spoke with John Nieves at FGUA. He told me Milton's heavy rains flooded the system.
Basically, it was submerged underwater. Anytime that you have the lift station submerged, you're going to have issues with the flow of sewage.
Lift stations, often used to pump wastewater in Florida. You can't rely on gravity alone to move sewage around here, given the state's low elevation. Especially since lift stations need electricity to work, Harwood says they add a layer of complexity to wastewater management during hurricanes.
We know that at some point, almost every lift station is going to fail at some point in its life.
Harwood says there's a reason most lift stations are built near small bodies of water, like retention ponds and creeks. When lift stations lose power in a storm or simply overflow from heavy rain, the sewage has to go somewhere.
Although we certainly don't want to chronically release large amounts of sewage, if it has to happen, it's better that it goes into a water body and gets diluted and carried off rather than, you know, going directly into places where people live and work and shop.
Like when raw sewage backed up into the homes in Astor. But since that backup wasn't a public health concern under Florida law, the owner of the sewage system didn't need to report it to any higher agency. Here's Nieves with FGUA again.
That's not considered a contamination. It is, I understand, in a person's home. I mean, obviously it's not sanitary, but it's not the... It doesn't fall under the DEP guidelines where we need to notify them for a contamination, if you will.
Sewage spills of more than 1,000 gallons are required to be reported to Florida's Department of Environmental Protection. But issuing a public notice of pollution that's readily available online, that's optional. Records show the last time FGUA submitted a public notice of pollution was 2017. State legislation requires local governments to evaluate and analyze long-term needs for their wastewater infrastructure to ensure it's resilient to sea level rise. But the projects to achieve that resiliency cost a lot of money, much of it ultimately coming from taxpayers. Here's USF professor Valerie Harwood again.
People have a hard time looking at, you know, a several million dollar bill to upgrade sewage infrastructure because they're like, my toilet's working fine. Why do we need to spend millions of dollars on this?
It goes back to how the topic of contamination from wastewater isn't very front and center for us, until it has to be.
I think that sewage is a big PR problem. So people don't like to talk about it. They don't like to think about it.
Harwood says more public awareness campaigns from regulatory agencies would help. And for the rest of us?
If you get a chance to vote for or talk about the need to provide better infrastructure, then it's in all of our best interest and in the environment's best interest to do it, to fund that sort of improvement.
Back in Astor, the permit for the sewer system serving Bill Barney's house is set to expire next October. Before then, Nieves says FGUA is hoping to break ground on some necessary system upgrades, like elevating a lift station to higher ground. He says that should help prevent future backups.
It's less likely that we'll have this issue. I can't say we won't, because if there's, again, major flooding and it still could occur, but it'll definitely improve it to where it's less likely.
Meanwhile, Barney says since he moved here in the early 90s, hurricanes are getting worse, along with flooding.
Usually it goes away quick.
And usually it doesn't come with raw sewage bubbling directly into Barney's house. He's hoping that will end up being a one-time affair.
So when I wake up, I'm going to step in water, and bigger than Texas, I sure did.
I hope you've enjoyed listening to Central Florida Seen and Heard, Rising Water, Part 2. We've talked about a lot in this three-part podcast, diving deep into water management in a quickly changing and growing Central Florida. As an environment reporter, I'll keep at it, covering how the state and region handle the complicated subject of rising water and breaking down what it all means for us here in Central Florida. Our podcast is produced by me, environment reporter Molly Durig, and my fellow journalists at Central Florida Public Media, with assistance from our news director, Latoya Dennis, assistant news director, Brendan Byrne, and digital director, Ryan Ellison. I'm Molly Durig. Talk with you soon.